When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ever since I was young, I knew that I was born to make noise. The next day we wake up and we're leaving and we're at breakfast, and like two tables away from us was Elton John's partner, David Furnish. I'm 13 at the time, so I have no sense of anything other than I'm like, oh, I need to go speak to him, I need to give him my demo. Exactly 24 hours later, Elton phones my mobile and he's like, hi, is this Talia? It's Elton John. And it's funny because people always ask me like why I am the way I am, all the hate that that came along with. You know, I went straight back to school in Scotland and I was bullied like nothing before. To be in music, you have to have a resilience like nothing before. People will laugh at you, people will judge you, people will give you moments and take them away. That's just life. But it's also like any business. And my biggest message is you should always go to someone saying what you can do for them, not what they can do for you.
That's why I want to talk about your parents now, because you've mentioned that, you know, your dad was kind of in the music industry. Yeah. Your mum was in branding. You said that you were lucky that you had them, and people call you a nepo baby because of it.
Yes.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of A Millennial Mind. Before we get into this podcast, I want to tell you all about my weekly live Sunday workshops. A lot of people ask how I was able to quit the corporate rat race and do something that I love every single day, and that's by working on myself and doing so many different things to do with my self-development. So every Sunday, I host a workshop focusing on different topics, from manifesting to the law of attraction to goal setting to how I manage my time, and you can join too. There's a 3-day free trial. I'll leave the link in the comments. But for now, let's get into the episode. Talia.
Shivani.
Welcome to Millennial Mind.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I know you're cramming so much in this week while you're in London.
Well, we have to stop by you.
Really excited to have you here. But for people who don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm a singer-songwriter, an entertainer. I am the host of Capital Breakfast in Scotland. And I am Talia.
Amazing. So when you were growing up, did you always know you wanted to be a singer?
Ever since I was young, I knew that I was born to make noise. I was so loud when I was young, and I just loved entertaining. I loved putting on a show, and whether that was forcing my sister, who was a year older than me, to come into the sitting room and like remove all the sofas and like try and stand on things to like perform to my mom and dad. We were the annoying kids that'd be like, come mum, watch us, come
no
sit
way.
Down and watch us, we've made a play, we've made a performance. Like I was like that. I just always knew that I loved music, really entertaining.
Amazing. I love that. I always feel like anyone who is a singer will always say from a younger age, I always knew, and it was kind of like my purpose.
Yeah.
So when did you kind of start getting into it and I guess really start performing in front of a lot of people?
So I am so lucky in that my parents were, my dad was in arrangements, making film scores, and he always had session singers in and out the studio. He'd always be in a recording studio, and I used to beg him, like, please just take me in, please just take me in. I must have been like 10, and eventually caved when I'm about age 12, I would say, and I got to make a demo with him, and we made a couple, but I was 12. They were like cute little kids boppy demos, but they were great. I mean, God bless my dad for putting up with me and sitting through those sessions. So when I was 13, I went away with my whole family. My granddad just turned 80, and we went for his 80th birthday on this amazing trip. And on the last day, he got ill. And this is what I mean about fate. Even I feel like now that I'm older, I understand it even more about how just fate and things happening for a reason. My granddad fell really unwell, and we all got the fright of our lives, and we had to extend the trip by one day. That meant flights, hotel, everything. But it was at Christmas time, so our hotel was full. So we got moved into another hotel, and my mum and dad are panicking. They're not in a good way, obviously, because my granddad. And me and my sister find out that Elton John is staying in this hotel. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to like walk about the lobby and bump into him. But obviously, in hindsight, Elton John does not walk through lobbies. I'm sure he's got back entrances and pianos and whatever. So the next day we wake up and we're leaving, and we're at breakfast, and like two tables away from us was Elton John's partner, David Furnish. So I literally, I'm 13 at the time, so I have no sense of anything other than I'm like, oh, I need to go speak to him, I need to give him my demo. So I took my little brother, who must have been 4 or 5 at the time, and I was like, let's just go up to him. And I said to my mum, do you think that's okay? She thought we'll get thrown at a hotel. And she was like, if you're okay with getting a no, then no problem. But also, she wasn't even thinking about this. Like, we're just grateful for my granddad to be getting yes. better and fly home. So I go up to David Furnished. I'm like, hi, is there any way you can give this to Elton John? And literally like a CD, like iPhones weren't even a thing back then. And he was like, yeah, no problem. And I had my little brother, and my little brother was called Zach. He has a son called Zach. And he was like, oh, I've got this connection to Scotland. And next, you know, he was like, no problem. Exactly 24 hours later, and we're still literally on our travels home because it was like all these connecting flights, Elton phones my mobile and he's like, hi, is this Talia? It's Elton John. I know. And it's wild because as I get older, I feel like I appreciate this even more than what it was. It almost feels more unreal the older I get, if that makes sense.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Elton John just called your mobile yeah. and said, hi, it's Elton John.
Yes. Yeah. And the
first of all, how did you have a mobile?
The Sony Ericsson. You know the, you know
oh my God,
the,
I had a Sony
do you know
Ericsson?
The pink one?
I had that
I
one.
Had the pink Sony Ericsson. Elton John is ringing my pink Sony Ericsson. And the irony is we were actually going through the airport at the time. And we're going through literally security. And we're at the point of security when you've just passed passport and you've got to put your bags on the belt. So I can't go back. I can always go forward. So I picked it up for the first time when we're going through the belt. And I was like, oh, hi, like, I can't talk right now. And I was just like, okay, well, can you come back? And I'm like looking at my mum to like know what to do. But obviously she's dealing with my brothers. And then I was like, no, that was Elton John. And she was like, what do you mean that was Elton John? Like, don't hang up on Elton John. So next was this big commotion. Obviously my grandparents like needing all this extra support to try to get them home. And they're like, what do you mean that was Elton John? I'm like, no, it was Elton John. And they also don't believe me. Because I'm like, it looks like I'm just making up some weird, chaotic lie in the middle of security because it's been a traumatic 24 hours. So, yeah, that was that. And then we get through security. And obviously I don't have his number because it's just like, it's like a no-caller ID. And then eventually he phones again. But it was like a good 20-minute wait between the first time he called and then when he called me back. And we were like panicking, like, oh my God, he's
We've
never going to... Yeah, because I didn't know what he wanted. It could have just been, I've listened to songs, it was nice. I didn't think for a minute Elton John would still be thinking about it 20 minutes later. Like, I didn't know what it was for. Could have literally just been, I've listened to your session. And he actually said he listened to the demo tape in the sound check for the performance he was doing that night, like in the stadium, like where he was. He said he'd like checked out my website at the time. It was just like pink flamingos to match my Sony Ericsson phone.
Okay, so he calls you back 20 minutes later. What did he say?
So I love my voice. I've got like a very soul, jazzy voice. And even back then, the songs were even more soulful. And I said at the time, my mum managed me. And my dad like is an arranger and does songs. And he was like, oh my God, you guys are the fucking Waltons of the music business. And at the time, I didn't even know what that was. I was just laughing. But like now that I'm older, I'm like, oh my God, this is actually unreal.
So what happened?
So he asked me to open his concert in Scotland 6 months later.
What?
Yeah, so 13-year-old Talia opened his concert and sang 5 songs. This is insane. I know, I've not told the story in ages because I'm so used to telling the story. Told it for years, I'm 25 now. So it was 12 years ago. But every time I tell it, it almost feels more unreal the older I get.
Oh my God. I'm so shocked.
Yeah. And it's funny because people always ask me like why I am the way I am or why I'm so passionate about my dreams and why I will never give up. And I think it's when you go through something like that so young, it lights a fire inside your soul. And I also believe that that happened to me for a reason. Like I was the 13-year-old he picked. I was the 13-year-old that went up and gave that demo. And I also think that all the hate that that came along with, you know, I went straight back to school in Scotland and I was bullied like nothing before. You stick your head above the water in any school. That's nothing special to me. That's just school. You know, if you're a great tennis player in your school, you got laughed at for wanting to do something bigger than what you were meant to be doing at that age. And that's okay. But that made me into the person who I was meant to be. So now I've got like massively thick skin and you can say anything to me and I'll take it and run.
Oh my gosh, so you basically got a call from Elton John. He asked you to open up a concert when you were 13 years old. I want to touch upon the bullying before I go into something else. Mm-hmm. What do you mean that you got bullied? Surely people weren't like, oh my God, you're so cool, I want to be your friend.
No, because it was like, who does she think she is? And next thing you know, I was all over the newspapers and it was like, that's so embarrassing. That's not real, that's fake. You know, it was like, well, no, this like actually happened. And in hindsight, I look back and I think, well, how else were other kids meant to cope? Of course, this is unreal. This is literally unreal. This is surreal. But it was real to me. So it was weird because in one sense I was so excited, but the other half of it was like, why are none of my friends at school happy for me?
Mm.
But in hindsight, it's like, of course they weren't happy for you. How does another 13-year-old be happy and be able to process those emotions? You know, you and I think that's why now, you know, as you get older, you understand things like empathy and compassion and being happy for others. But how can other 13-year-olds possibly know what that is? I didn't even know what that was. So I don't blame any of the kids that ever had a go at me and laughed at me and bullied me. That's just life. But I'm grateful for them because it taught me compassion and empathy. And now I will always have time for, you know, anyone that slides my DMs and asking for advice or, like, needs a helping hand, because one of the biggest superstars in the world gave me a chance when I'll never be able to repay that, you know? So my whole life really owed it to Elton John.
Why do people say it was fake? That's what I'm confused about. What about it could have been fake?
Well, I'm a girl from Scotland in a random village called Killearn. How do you explain that? How do I explain the fact that I went up on the other side of the world, went up to David Furnish's partner with the demo tape? You know, like, that takes balls of steel. And I was 13. But at 13, you do have balls of steel. You know, you have nothing to lose at that age. So, of course, you're going to, like, do the YOLO.
I love it. I think that's so great. And I think the greatest part of that story is your mum was like, go, but be okay with someone saying no to you. And you were just like, okay, I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
And that takes actually so much courage to actually, like, get up from your seat and actually ask. And I think that there are times where I feel confident to do that. And there are other times, like, I remember seeing Simon Cowell and I really wanted to go up to him and ask him to be on my podcast because he's, like, one of my dream guests. But I didn't, because he was having lunch with his family on a Sunday at Soho Farmhouse. And I was like, I just don't want to be annoying. And there's a voice that sometimes, like, don't be that person that's so annoying. And recently I went to this premiere and, like, I saw the most amazing person that I'd want to take a photo with. And I didn't ask. And I was like, why? Why am I not doing that? Because there's been times in my life where I have, and it's been incredible. But it doesn't mean that just because you did that with Elton John, it means that forever you've been confident to go and ask someone, right? Like, sometimes it is just literally in that moment you're like, fuck it, I'm going to do it.
Okay, so this is really important because I think a lot of people look at me and think I am either Delulu or I do have these balls of steel. But I'm not going to lie, I probably am the most introverted extrovert. It's very easy for me to be outgoing because it's almost like a performance and I know how to perform.
Mm.
And that is my purpose and my why, and I love it and I get a thrill from it. But that doesn't mean I don't have feelings. That doesn't mean I get upset when the guy I like doesn't text me back. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's so much human to me. And it also doesn't mean that, yes, Elton John worked out, but there's a million other times, you know, I've had awkward encounters. People have told me to get lost. Big people have chased a moment or knocked a door and they've told me to run a million miles.
Mm.
So I think it's easy for us to come on these podcasts and be like, look at all these amazing things I did. But also, I'm here now, even after all these years, from a million rejections and a million humiliations.
Mm.
But I do think it's really important because I think I grow as a person when I do get embarrassed. And embarrassment is, I think, probably one of the worst feelings you can ever get, because it's like a humbling. It's like I really only have myself to blame. Even though I always say to people, you've got nothing to be embarrassed for. But it's those moments where in life somebody might have laughed at you, or just, you know, even a relationship when you're humbled by a guy, it's like, wow, what was that for? But I think in those moments where you really find who you're meant to be, your purpose, your why, your drive, and you're either going to go again or you're going to back down. And I'll always go again.
So amazing. I mean, I want to go back to when you were 13 and you are asked to do this concert. Yeah. How did you deal with that pressure?
To be honest, I didn't know what pressure was back then. This was a once in a million Hannah Montana type thing. And I grew up on Disney Channel. So I grew up on Troy and Gabriella, High School Musical. You know, Shake It Up was on the TV, Bella Thorne, Zendaya. I was like, I want to be them. I want to be a pop star. Of course this was going to happen to me. You know, we talk about manifesting and, like, the Delulu now on TikTok and the delusion, but it's actually nothing other than going back to that carefree attitude you had in a child. So this is why it's the same way you didn't go up to Simon Cowell. You probably would have gone up to Simon Cowell when you were 12.
For sure.
You wouldn't have cared. You wouldn't have known the fear of the embarrassment if he told you to go away.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's because it's the lessons we learn from after, when we're young and we start growing up. Those are the ones that almost scar us. of, oh, well, I don't want that to happen again, you know?
Mm.
You know, it's when I, along the way, I had the same entertainment lawyer as Drake, and I got to meet him backstage at the Oval Hydro in Scotland. And it was our lawyer that set us up, and we brought him whiskey, and he was so kind, and he was incredible, and he was like, wow, I'm going to listen to your music, all this stuff. And his manager always stayed in touch. We got all these photos of me hugging Drake. And about, like, maybe, like, 7 years later, I met him. And, like, obviously he didn't remember, which is fine. And literally he turned around in front of everyone. I said something, wasn't even listening, and he was, like, awkward, right? And I was so mortified because I was like, oh my God, like, I've got these photos of me and Drake on my Instagram. Like, I know his manager, I've, like, messaged his manager and invites me places. And I was, like, so mortified for years. And then I saw him again and he was nice. So, but this is what I mean.
So true. That,
do you know what I, like, I'm not being funny. Drake doesn't care who I am, and nor should he. But he's not thinking about me. But I think the problem is we take it personal.
We do.
So in that moment, I was like, oh my goodness, Drake's just said awkward to me. And now I have this joke. I'll always like be like awkward in my head because I'm like, that's such a metaphor for life. Like, honestly, take yourself off the pedestal, de-humble yourself and go again. Who cares?
I think also with people that we admire and we love, we place so much importance on like their mood. So, for example, if you meet someone and they're having a bad day, but you'll think that they hate you or they don't like you. And by the way, this has happened to me too. Like I've met somebody and I've been like, wait, they were so nice last time. Why are they being so cold to me? And then I'm like, hold on, maybe they're just having a bad day.
You know what? It's
like maybe they're normal and they're pissed off and they don't really want to engage with me when I've seen them somewhere. And it's really difficult because someone actually DM'd me once and was like, by the way, I can't believe you. I just saw you in Selfridges. We made eye contact and I smiled at you and you didn't even smile at me back. And I was like, huh? And it was Christmas. It was like 2 weeks before Christmas. And I was like, I'm really sorry I didn't see you.
No.
And for them, they took it so personally. But I was like, I genuinely didn't see you. Making eye contact when you're walking through Selfridges during Christmas is impossible. It wasn't like on the escalator. It wasn't like I was sitting down. It wasn't like I was sitting in a shop. I literally walked through Selfridges. So if I'm walking through and I've glanced at you, it doesn't mean I've given you eye contact. I genuinely might be in my own world.
Mm-hmm.
And when I emailed back telling them that person, saying that to that person, they were like, oh, okay, thank you. But they automatically thought that I didn't like them or I was being cold or I was fake online or whatever. And look, people are going to have those interpretations of you when you are online because people have an expectation of you in their mind. And I guess like in terms of Drake, you love him and admire him. So
love
like
him.
Anything he said, like even if it was just like, how are you okay? It would be like, oh my God, he hasn't been like, oh my God, so nice to see you again.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's like, it's interesting. We all have that, don't we? Because it's like our inner critic.
You know, it's funny you just said that because I'll never forget about 2 years ago, I had like my first heartbreak in my life. And when he like dumped me, one of the things he said was, yeah, my like whatever the relation was, my sister's best friend's cat, whatever the thing was, said you pushed past her at a party and you thought you were it. And I thought, okay, first of all, lame on you for not just saying you want to dump me and blame on this random sister's cat's aunt's uncle said that I was a diva, right? And it just upset me so much because I thought, okay, first of all, I was living in London at the time. I was going to events every night to network, to like knock doors, to meet people, to make TikToks, to literally work my tits off. And some random person at the party saying I pushed past them. And I was like, that upset me so much because technically that's a dig at me and my career. Because when I go to these events, I'm showing up as me and my brand. And I thought, shame on you. Because when I'm around you, I'm not my brand. I'm me as a person. So for you to bring my brand into this, where, you know, I would, you know, you're my private life. I would never go to a party with you in an event. It wasn't like that. This was like, you know, just out of that having fun. I thought to myself, what a low blow. So I relate so much to that because now I'm always so conscious. Maybe it's the trauma from that about when you go out and about, it's like you do just have to just take a minute.
Yeah.
And I've noticed it now more than ever because I wake up at 4:30 in the morning for my Capital show. And I probably never experienced a tiredness like this in my life just because I'm up probably 6 extra hours a day. You're like, some nights I'm getting like 4 or 5 hours sleep because I'm going to bed at midnight, which is fine, and I would do it all again. I love what I do, but at the end of the day I do notice myself just being exhausted, you know,
and not being perhaps as aware.
And I'm not aware.
And
if anything, my friend said to me the other day, tell you just keep staring. But it's because I'm staring because I'm literally like trying to keep myself awake. I'm not even thinking about anything. But if that sister's uncle's best friend's cat and I was at a party, saw me staying, they might think that I'm like, think I'm better than the party. No, hon, I've just been up since 4:30 doing a breakfast show.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
This is where it comes down to, we're all living our own lives. Mm. We're all doing our own battles. We're all chasing our own dreams. So honestly, compassion and empathy is the one thing that I'm always just like, I try and remind myself to be constant, give other people a bigger chance because people might not necessarily give us the chance.
Yeah.
So
I love that.
I think it's just being more aware that we're all dealing with our own things.
For sure. So you're 30 and you do this show. How many people was it?
Like 17,000 people.
What?
Yeah. But the thing,
weren't you scared?
Of course I was. But
okay.
I also wanted to be Hannah Montana. And at this point I was Hannah Montana because I was still in school.
That's amazing.
Like being a pop star in the nighttime.
And how was that? So you did one show or?
One show. It was just okay. One. And I did Sky News in that morning and I'll never forget it because it was my first time on Sky News and I didn't understand live TV. You don't see anything. I'm in Glasgow and you get a little earpiece. And my first word on Sky News was, pardon? Because I didn't hear what you said. And I thought that's hilarious that my big debut on Sky News
so
was pardon.
Funny.
Pardon.
Like, that's it's like, so funny.
I'm a little random Scottish girl. Great. But
so you did the show.
Did the show.
17,000 people. Mm-hmm. What did you sing?
So I sang, I opened it with Summertime, Ella Fitzgerald, a jazz
nice.
Classic. And then I did four of my original songs, which were on the demo, which
wow.
is so wholesome and sweet. And then eventually, years later, I released California and He Loves Me on my debut album, which I independently released. And those were two of the songs that I sang
for Elton John
that he originally heard on the demo tape that I gave him.
And so what happened after that concert?
The stuff after this is what made me who I am. So I got flown out to New York to do a TED Talk for the We Are Family Foundation and Now Rogers. And I spoke about my experience. Next thing you know, that went viral on the internet. I met Drake's lawyer. He signed me. And
how old are you at this point?
Like 14. And then next thing you know, I'm brought out to LA and New York. And I went around all the labels. There's the bidding war for all these labels to sign me. I'm still in school at this point. And I'm thinking, this is it. I'm Hannah Montana. I'm living my dream. I can't believe it. It's all so exciting. And we had one of the most incredible A&Rs of all time, Ron Fair, who got into the mix and was like, this is it, you have to be mine, I'll sign you to Capitol Records. And I was like, this is it. And 6 weeks after we signed the actual deal, he got fired. And keep in mind, to sign a deal with a minor and somebody who lives outside the US, it literally took us about 6 months to get the paperwork right. So we spent 6 months doing the paperwork. I must be like 15 and a half now. And we literally, it just goes radio silent. We're like, what do you mean? We just signed the deal that we've literally been almost waiting 2 years for out of all the bidding wars we've gone with you. And my A&R, Ron Fair, probably the greatest of all time. He's done, you know.
What's A&R?
How do I explain it? He controls your music for the record label.
Got it.
He's like the captain of the ship. That's an A&R.
Okay.
He would look after you. He's like your dad in the world of your label. And he was all my type of music. Christina Aguilera. He discovered Christina Aguilera. So that's who I wanted to be. R&B, soulful with my jazz roots. And we found out he's fired. And they're like, okay, cool. We'll just make Katy Perry. And I was like, well, I can't sing pop music. That's not what I know. And my lawyer phoned me up. And he was like, great. We're going to have to do everything in our power to get you out the deal. And you're not allowed to release one song with them because then you'll be shelved forever. And that was it. Because that's the captain of the ship. What's a ship without a captain? Nothing. So then it took us another 6 months. Next, you know, I'm still in school in Scotland thinking, all that was for what? But I don't look at this and think, feel sorry for me. I think, what a blessing to be even in those rooms and meet those people and experience all this. But that was also a lot for me as a kid to have all that so soon and all of it taken away.
Yes.
Nothing to show for it. No album release, no song release, no nothing. So I never released a song with the label. So at this point, I'm like heartbroken, and I'll never forget like some of the UK labels were a bit salty about the fact that we signed with America to begin with. So when we came back here, like quite a lot of them were like reaching out being like, well, that's what happens when you go to America. But obviously the American deal is 10 times bigger than anything the UK could have given us. And they were like, yeah, well, no label will ever sign you now. That's you done. And I was still in school and I did really well in school. And at this point, I had to move school, and it actually was the best thing. I moved to a local school called Baffron High just because the bullying was so bad in my first school for trying to put myself out there. And how do I tell my school friends that actually all that was for what? Because now I don't even have a record deal. all of it's a lot, but I'm grateful for it because I wouldn't be where I am now with all those almost moments.
When you say the bullying was so bad, what do you mean?
Just like kids laughing at me. I'll never forget. There was this one guy who'd roll up paper and throw at me just for like the lol. Like it was like I was literally living a high school movie, and it got so bad. I used to just like laugh off and ha, lol, it's fine. You know, it's just the popular kids trying to be funny. I literally burst out crying, left the classroom, literally went to see the headmaster or even like a junior person being like, I actually just can't do it anymore. I know they find it funny. They were like tweeting me, like putting me on their Facebook. And I know it was just for their entertainment, but it's like, I'm still a person. But I think it's because on the outside, I had so many blessings. I'm so grateful for all of them. But in hindsight, that was a lot for other kids to process. So no wonder they were overwhelmed for what was happening to me. But also in hindsight, I'm like, why care? Leave me alone. Like, I wasn't trying to be anything special in school. I was trying to keep myself to myself. Half the time I ended up just going hiding in the music rooms because I was like, this is just way too overwhelming.
That must have been a lot to deal with because your dream has kind of been met and then it's taken away from you.
Yeah.
What happened after that?
So the way I see music in general now that I know what I know, obviously I'm 25 now, I've lived 10 lives, I feel like, is that I'm no different from Lady Gaga's story, you know, Miley Cyrus's story. To be in music, you have to have a resilience like nothing before. People will laugh at you, people will judge you, people will give you moments and take them away. That's just life. But it's also like any business. So straight away, I wanted to just put out all my songs when I finished school on an album independently, expected nothing from it. And like I got like a million streams. I was really chuffed, but obviously I had no money for marketing or anything like that. I just put them out because I didn't want those songs to die because they were who I was. And I got an amazing book deal with Scholastic after I hosted TEDxTeen in London. And I released those books, which did really well, funny enough, in America, just about my story. And it was based on a character called Stormhall, based on my Elton John experience. Incredible. And then was like, well, I want to move down to London now. But the good thing about my parents, I come from a very, very, I'm very, very lucky to have an amazing family. And I wouldn't be anywhere without them. But the best thing to ever happen to me is my parents were really strict. My mum was like, look, if you want to do this, you're going to have to pay for your own rent. You're going to have to go figure it out. And I'm grateful for that because I'm very lucky. My mum could have turned around and paid for my rent, no problem. But she didn't. She was like, you've got to go figure that out. So I went straight down to London. I tried to get into influencing, anything that could make me money so that I could build my way up. So I could make music videos, and I started making music videos with like a great little group of people in London. I was like editing them myself in Final Cut Pro. Best thing my mum said to me, she was like, when I was young and I was in school, she was like, you have to learn how to edit. And that's actually changed my life because I released a music video last year called Addicted, and I got this Brit Award winning team to film it, and I edited it on Final Cut Pro. That's one of my favourite videos ever. So I'm very hands on with that. Like I love creating the art. So for me, this might all sound dramatic, but I love what I do. I love music. I love storytelling. I love improving myself. So I got into reality TV. I did like shows like Celebs Go Dating. I did like E4 Driving School. And at the time, a lot of people were judging that, being like a singer going into reality TV, like trash. But if anything, now all the labels are trying to get their acts into reality TV. For me, I think I see myself as a J-Lo. I'm not trying to be, you know, an overnight one-hit wonder. I'm in this for the long run. My music, my writing, my piano, my art gets better through every experience, through every year as I grow and evolve as an artist and singer. And I am an entertainer the same way J-Lo is. So if that means, you know, I'll get my big break one day through a film I do or a TV program or maybe the song, whatever the entertainment outlet is, then I'll do it. But I think my message to anybody watching this thinking, where do you even begin in this chaos of entertainment or the music industry? It's just start and don't put pressure on whatever makes you go. You know, we put a lot of pressure into talking about doing the thing, but I'm a very much of do it. If it doesn't work out, pivot. It's all about the pivot. Just go, just put yourself on the track. You know, there's no point waiting in the stands.
You mentioned a lot about pivoting. And I think that there's so many conflicting theories here online, because all I hear is people saying, if one business doesn't work out, try another one. And then there's also this notion of like, oh my God, she's in everywhere, her fingers in every pie. I'm not talking about you. I'm just saying that people say that online. And a lot of people say you don't want to be everywhere because then people think you're unfocused, or what do you actually do? I think it's a bit confusing because it seems like it's only acceptable in certain industries. You just mentioned you've been criticized for that.
Yes.
Why do you think that's the case in the entertainment industry, that people are like, well, which one are you?
This is such a good topic because, as far as I'm concerned, you don't stop. You don't stop pivoting. You don't stop trying, changing until you are Taylor Swift, until you are Margot Robbie, until you are the biggest lawyer in the law firm, whatever your industry is. Mm. And I think that's a very, I think that's a thing in the UK I see more than ever, that you have to stay in your lane.
Yes.
Well, I'm not being funny, but no, you don't. You do everything until you get that hit song. And I promise you get that hit song and then suddenly you've got a clean slate and then we all care about you. So it actually almost doesn't matter. You could literally do anything before. Kylie Minogue started on Neighbours. Like, everybody has a story. Let's just keep this in perspective. And I think that's what I have to constantly remind myself. Mm. It's funny because I just wore that Union Jack outfit to the Brits.
I saw.
I dyed my hair. I feel like I am coming into the R&B singer I was always meant to be. And, you know, I'm slowly but surely doing less influencer stuff and being able to do just more music posts. Now, that comes from the privilege I have of now making money through my radio show, through doing well, through my brand deals. Now, 2 years ago, I couldn't pay my rent. I had to say yes to every influencer deal so that I could keep the stream alive.
Yeah.
So who are you to judge somebody for taking all the influencer deals or doing the side hustle or working in the bar, whatever they have to do to get that money to keep the dream alive?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, you need to go broke to get the dream. Well, no, you actually don't. You can do it all. If you're able to do it all and you're able to do 10 jobs to fund the one dream, then I'm always going to tell the person to take the 10 jobs to fund the one dream. This all-American dream, or all-UK dream, because in America you can get away with doing everything and anything. It's this whole UK dream of stay in your lane, do one thing, or else no one will take you seriously. Well, no, because then you could get cast in a Netflix film and then you're a superstar. You know, I think I was presenting on the red carpet at the BAFTAs the other day, and I think actors are the best at giving these speeches of this doesn't happen overnight. You will literally spend your whole life doing auditions, getting no's, and you'll get one yes and it'll change your whole life. So stop stressing about archiving your Instagram. Stop stressing about the branding, the colour schemes, the colour palettes. When it's ready to pop, it will pop through passion and desire. And I got into habit of this. And, you know, we are in this trend of, you know, clean girl aesthetic, Molly May. I love it. But if that's not your vibe, then don't panic, because these are all trends.
So
these
true.
Are all cyclical. And I catch myself doing it too. I'm like, oh no, I need to archive more Instagram posts because it's all not really flowing, and now it's all about less is more. Well, a couple of years ago it was like, well, she's not doing enough. So is it she's not doing enough, or is it less is more? Is it like clean girl aesthetic, or is it like neon? Well, just do you. If you show up as yourself every day, you can't get annoyed that you've done the wrong thing because you're staying true to you. And if that means I want to wear a bikini on the Brits, I will. If that means I want to wear a Union Jack and dye my hair on the Brits, I will. You know what? Judge me for it. But I'm not giving up. And one day I'm going to get that one song that takes me over the finish line.
I love that. I actually agree with you so much with the clean girl aesthetic, because I actually was speaking to my agent the other day and I was like, I'm just going to be honest with you. I can't film my get readies with me when it look with a light is amazing and it's a plain background and I have a setup. I was like, I just don't. I'm really sorry. I'm going to have to do it on my floor and my gown. And I was like, I wish I was that person that could film these incredible reels that are just so clean, like with the Dyson. And I use the Dyson, but my Dyson's like me in my bedroom, like with my, you know, so many things in the background. And I was like, I just can't do it. I was like, I can't do it. And she was like, don't. And I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know how to do it. I wish someone could tell me to, then I would do it. But I just can't do it. It doesn't come easily to me. Even actually when I like go out to go get coffee, the image that I had is like, I'd always look nice and like, you know, look like pleasing. I literally sometimes walk out with like, my top is red and then my joggers are gray and then my shoes are black. And I'm like, I can't do it. Like, it takes me a lot of time to think about what I'm going to wear, because I really have to think about it. But I'm not gonna do it every time. Like, it's just not me. And I think that what you're saying as well around the pivoting, I think is actually a really good thing. And if other people are gonna judge you, other people are gonna judge you. I wanna talk to you about what you said in terms of like your mom and dad being super supportive. Do you feel like from a young age they pushed you?
I think they pushed me because they knew I could do it. And I think they could see that I am my own worst enemy and my own worst critic. So I think where I talk about getting a lot of hate online and even being bullied at school, the way I saw it was nobody was giving me a hard time the way I give myself a hard time.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm a Scorpio. I'm very introverted extrovert. Like, I am very inwards. I do feel like I've lived 10 lives and I've got 10 past lives. Like, I'm very, that's just who I am.
Yeah.
You know, I was a loner as a kid. You know, I'd quite happily go sit in my bedroom on my own. And that was since I was very young. That's nothing new to now. So I think my parents knew that I was happiest, most comfortable, and maybe slightly different. Maybe they could see in me that I was only most comfortable when I was performing and making music and singing. And that's when I was relaxed. And I think at the end of the day, we're all just looking for that relaxed state. That's why we meditate. That's why we do yoga. You know, that's why we all have a dream. And I think that the privilege I have is the fact that my parents saw I had a dream and helped me keep the dream alive. Because I think nowadays it's very easy for the spark to be blown out.
Yes.
And they always kept my spark alive. And that's the biggest blessing I will take all the way, you know.
I think it's really amazing, by the way, that they believed in you so much that they pushed you. Because
yeah.
I always wonder, where's the line of somebody saying, as a parent, I really believe in you, or this is my dream, I'm going to push it on you.
Yeah.
Like, why is the narrative that they pushed me? Like, I don't know if you've seen King Richard. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
And there are some people who are like, he pushed it upon them. He wrote out a plan for his kids that they're going to be tennis players before they were born. So is it his dream, or did he want the best for his kids and he pushed them to be the best tennis players in the world? Mm-hmm. And I feel like the narrative changes depending on the kind of person you are.
Yeah, and I think it does get to a point where, obviously I'm not a parent yet, but I can imagine my parents could see that I was ready to step up. So, you know, ever since I was, I would say about 15, 16, I made myself like a email address and I was on it. I was like emailing every brand in the world, like being my own PA. And I think that is when my mum realised, okay, she's on it. And I'd be making like mood boards for like songs and like treatments for how I wanted videos to be, even though I had no budget for videos and there was no videos being made. But it was like my way of expressing the art. I'm just like, even still to this day, I think this is something probably that maybe where the line is blurred of why people don't really get it. But at the same time, my mum always reminds me is no one knows who you are. And I think we probably get in our heads thinking, oh, well, people know me, so I have to explain.
Yes.
I go out there every day assuming that nobody knows who Talystrom is. And that's fine. And that's great. And that's why it's like, okay, great. Well, I want to tell you. Let me introduce myself. And me, you know, I'm 25 now. I'm, for the first time in my life, I feel like I'm very proud of myself. I feel like I am starting to feel successful because I give myself a really hard time. And still to this day, I was up at 4:30 this morning. I've done about 4 different meetings and I'm here with the beautiful you. And it's like, I'm never going to stop knocking doors, begging people to give me a break, begging people to get me in their sessions, to write with them, to make more music, to whether that means collaborating with a photographer or meeting new people or meeting a new creative team. You never stop evolving and never stop creating. And I think perhaps where I see the difference between me and another new artist who's probably given up by now, I think a lot of people blame their managers, whereas me, I feel like technically I'm my own manager as well. I have to hold accountability. If this doesn't work, then I've done something wrong. There's no one coming to save you. And I always say this. I've not knocked the right doors. I've not made another PDF. I'm constantly making PDFs for Talystrom. I'm constantly pitching myself in a whole new way. And that's something I want to remind people of. If you're an artist right now, don't worry about trying to find the perfect manager, the Scooter Braun coming to save you. Get on those emails, open Keynote right now, put all your pictures in there, put out the vision board, put the dream, send it to people, tell them what you can do. And my biggest message is you should always go to someone saying what you can do for them, not what they can do for you. Every person I email, it's like, here, look, this is what I can do for you, you know.
So powerful.
And I've been doing that since I was 15, but the privilege is my mum taught me everything I know. She was in branding. She was in marketing. She had 4 kids and was running a full-time job. You know, that's just what I come from. So I'm so lucky that, you know, both my parents worked and they worked their tits off and they taught me that. And they were strict, you know. And I'm so, so grateful for that.
There's 2 things I want to ask you and I'm going to come on to your parents in a second.
Sure.
But there's 2 conflicting narratives we see online. Hustle culture is admired, but now there's this new phrase that everyone's saying, I don't chase, I attract. And they conflict. And for some reason, we have now created a society is if you ask for it and you're begging for it, like you just said, you're like desperate. Why? What's the difference between someone being desperate and someone trying to find an opportunity and make a life for themselves?
Yeah, it's you've got to try hard but not be seen to be a tryhard. And it's ironic because half my TikTok comments are like, she loves herself. And then the other half are, I'm schooling, and it's like, love yourself. And then it's like, this is handed to her on a plate. And then the other comments are saying she's trying too hard. I'm not being funny. I try very hard. And I'm not in the church yet. I will be. And I'm going to own the fact that I try very hard. And I'm not giving up till I get there.
Yeah.
And I think that don't chase, attract applies to when you fancy a guy, you know, take you on a date. And when I'm manifesting my Lamborghini driving beautiful man to come into my life and whisk me off your feet, then we can use that I don't chase to attract. But when I'm talking about my money, my trying to get festival lineups and in with the biggest producers, making music videos and doing TV shows and doing hosting or whatever your entertainment, whatever your job is, you knock all those doors you can. You be seen to be trying. Mm-hmm. You try hard and then you try again. You don't let anybody stop in your tracks. And I think that's also, I feel like we went through a phase in society of like, oh, I made this song in my bedroom and then it just happened overnight. And then we discover that like Dr. Luke and Max Martin made the song. Like, let's just keep it real. I try very hard. We all try very hard. And it's cool to try.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
It's cool to show up. It's cool to try. It's cool to fail. It's cool for people to be like, wow, she missed the boat there. But cool, look, you know what? Here's a new song.
Yeah.
Here's a new music video. And here's another pivot. Enjoy it.
I agree. It's cool to try. And I think that it's also a defense mechanism when you don't try because you're like, I didn't try, so I don't care. But actually, it's cool to care. Yeah. It's cool to say, I want to work hard for this. It's cool to say, my God, I sent a million emails. Because the opposite way is like, she just got lucky. So I feel like you can never win.
Yeah.
Because if you try really hard and you're sending out all these emails, people will be like, she's a beg or she's trying too hard or she's desperate. But then the other way is if you get an opportunity, people are like, well, you got lucky and, you know, you're a Nepo baby, mm-hmm. which is something that you've been called.
Yes.
And that's why I want to talk about your parents now, because you've mentioned that, you know, your dad was kind of in the music industry.
Yes.
Your mum was in branding. You said that you were lucky that you had them.
Yeah.
And people call you a Nepo baby
mm-hmm.
because of it.
Yes.
What does a Nepo baby mean?
So, first of all, this is hilarious because I grew up in the smallest little village in Scotland and my parents do very well, but I am no daughter of David Beckham, okay? And my dad is not Johnny Depp. Now, first of all, I am going to stick up for all the real Nepo babies and say I don't think there's anything wrong with that because Lily Rose Depp still has to show up every day and film one of the Idol and she has to walk on the runway and she does, you know, 20-hour days.
Mm.
They work hard, okay? Yes, you get the exceptions, but judge people for what they do. Yes, as she had doors open, great, but she still has to show up.
Yes.
Now, for me, I think there's always going to be a something as to why somebody wants to bring you down. And the thing about this is, you know what? Say anything you want about me. Honestly, I don't even mind it. You can judge me in any way. You can bring my parents into this. But as far as I'm concerned, I wake up at 4:30 every morning. I work my tits off and I show up every day trying to work harder and trying to better myself. And the reason why this doesn't bother me is because I owe this everything and we our whole family do to my granddad. And my granddad came from a working class background. He grew up in Glasgow. He dropped out of school at 13. He went to be a plumber and he lived in a tenement building just outside Glasgow with his like four brothers and sisters. And no qualifications, went out to be a plumber. And then through the years, hustled his way into making one of the most successful steel companies in Scotland. Now, that is a man from a working class background, tenement building with rats. When he had my mum only kind of grew into the life when she was about 13 is when my granddad started to do really well. So my mum had seen both sides. And she'd also seen my granddad work for that.
Yes.
So this is not some sort of generational wealth thing. This is my granddad coming from nothing and becoming successful, you know? So my granddad was in steel. You know, that's not entertainment. My mum went out there and she went into marketing and built her own business.
Mm.
And she made a thing called the Scottish Fashion Awards. And she had the big idea of just celebrating Scottish talent. And like 10 years later of giving back to Scotland and the community of young designers and young textiles in Scotland, she got a CBE from Prince William. So that's a prime example of, my mum had no connections in fashion other than the fact that my granddad, who was in steel, taught her everything she knows. So this is what I mean by everyone has a story. Now, I'm not demeaning the fact that I think I'm not privileged. I'm so privileged. I'm so lucky that I have that. But the root is my granddad, who came from nothing. And he is the person I want everyone to look up to because he did it from absolutely nothing. And if he can do that from nothing, I can do this from my granddad and my mum and my dad and all of us. So I feel so lucky, and I feel like I was put here for a reason. And my purpose on earth is so much bigger than, you know, entertainment and making TikToks and making music. And I really know that I'm really feel like I'm really coming into my own only just now. Maybe this just does come with age. And I know that's maybe cringy. Maybe I'm starting to feel like I really am growing up recently.
I love it that you're 25. I'm like so jealous you're 25. I'm 30. I'm like, oh, for God's sake, I want to be 25 again.
I don't know. I feel like I've just lived so many lives. If you followed me, I've had crimped hair, I've had blonde hair, I've had, you know, one minute I'm like 10 kg heavier, one minute I'm not. Like, you know, I've got to work for all different aspects of just showing up as me, you know? So I think just give people a break. We've all got our own story.
Yeah.
And I bet you 50% of the TikTokers probably think my dad is David Beckham. Do you know what I mean? So let's just give people a break. He's not.
It's so interesting because I think that the whole Nepo baby privilege conversation, look, we all love to hear a story from rags to riches. We just do. Everyone's like, oh my God, if they had a helping hand, then they're a failure. And I find it a bit confusing because what do you want people to do? Let's just say, for example, your granddad's rags to riches. No money and he's come from a working class background. Now he's a billionaire. Let's just say. What do people expect his children to do? I'm like so confused. So, because what do you want someone who's really... What David Beckham's kids, if they did nothing, everyone would be like, see, waste of space. Now they're doing something. People are like, well, he's got connections. We all use our connections. We all use our connections. When I started this podcast, I was using every connection that I had in my life to get people onto the podcast. I still use a lot of connections to get onto this podcast because now I've got you as my friend. I'll be like, Talia, tell me anyone you want me to connect with. There's nothing wrong with it. But I almost think that like we have created a society where we just constantly judge people. And when they get to a place, and I'm seeing this online at the moment as well, when a creator gets to a space, it's like an attack of like, how can we bring them down? Like, the second you get really successful, it's like swarming in to bring you down.
The question I want to ask, and I still don't know the answer to, is why is it we only want to humble and bring the people down that are on the rise?
Yes.
For example, people talk about me career handed on a plate. No one's looking about the fact that I've been doing this 12 years, working my tits off, up at 4:30 in the morning, run a million jobs. But yet nobody wants to slack off Taylor Swift on our jet flying around the world. Every day I'm reading on the show she's staying in a £24,000 hotel. That's our dream and that's incredible. So why is it that we only want to slag people off who are
trying,
almost making money? I'm not making money yet.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, my successful granddad, my successful mum is nothing compared to Kylie Jenner or, you know, a Premier League footballer. But yet, for some reason, we want to talk about this as silver plate entitled because I'm very lucky to be into a very hardworking family. And I don't think people want to talk about it because I understand nobody wants to offend anybody. But I'm just so curious. We idolize Kylie Jenner, Taylor Swift, these billionaires, but yet, you know, they've all had some sort of something too and they got there. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's not our place to stay, but I'm just... Yeah. I see it online. I'm like, why can we all not just celebrate the ones who are on the come up as well?
Yeah. And I use this example a lot. I'm like, we all start a race. Some people start, you know, a little bit ahead. Everyone has to run. Everyone has to run to the finish line. So if you're privileged, you still have to work. Like, yes, OK, you might have got a helping hand here and you might have got a helping hand there. But I do think if you live in the UK and you've grown up here, we've all come from some level of privilege. You know, my family aren't like rich billionaires either. Went to a grammar school, but it was a very good school. That's a privilege. We all have our own levels of privilege. And I think we're always trying to deflect away from it because the rags to riches story is the one that we all want to hear. And I think that we need to kind of work away from that now and accept that a lot of us in this generation have something.
Yeah, I think I'm so grateful for all of the blessings. But I think it's just more about, let's just give people a chance. Yeah. Let's just judge people for what we know their actions. Mm. You know, actions really do speak louder than words. So let's judge from actions rather than words, and that's all we can ask for.
Talking about criticism, I Googled your name before you came. And I wrote Talia Storm Daily Mail. Now, these are the articles. Talia Storm puts on a busty display. Talia Storm puts on a very racy display. Talia Storm puts on a leggy display. Talia Storm goes braless under white shirt and Union Jack.
Talia!
Now, why are all these Daily Mail articles all about your appearance?
Well, you know, the thing is, that doesn't even bother me. I'm not even bothered.
It's quite shocking. Well, it's like they've copied and pasted and just changed leggy, bra, backy, strapless.
It doesn't bother me when the pictures are nice. I'm like, I'm grateful to be spoken about. My mum always used to say, don't jump in the sea if you can't swim with the sharks. And I've said that a million times. It's true. If you want to be in entertainment, you need to be grateful that you've been written about. You should start crying when they stop. You should be start crying when there's crickets when you Google my name. So I'm always grateful for stuff like that. And, you know, even nowadays, I see probably more negative comments just because my videos are going further. And I'm like, wow, maybe we really are getting somewhere, you know?
So you don't let them bother you?
No, really not now. The only stuff that really bothers me is when people want to question my work ethic, because I don't have a social life. My art really is my everything. I love music. I love writing. I love being an artist. I love singing. And I'm going to do everything in my power to get there. And if that means doing a TV show, if that means doing my radio show, if that means, you know, getting on stage and performing in front of 10 people, then I'm going to do it because I love what I do. And if you want to judge me for it, then bring it on. But like you said, it's cool to try. It's cool to show up. Mm. And I'm just going to keep being the cringy advocate for being like, you know what, I try. And what are we going to do about it?
So people criticize you for basically wanting fame from other things. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think people just criticize me because they see me trying everything.
Fine. And they're just like, stick to singing.
No,
don't
people
go
aren't even
TV
saying
show.
That. People are saying, give up the singing, love. And I'm like, I will never give up the singing. The singing is the reason why Elton John asked me to open his concert.
Mm.
And I will get there.
It's interesting that people keep saying you're a Nepo baby because you got that. I'm so confused by it. You randomly saw his partner and you went up to him.
The Nepo baby was never back then. The Nepo baby's a new thing.
So it's like with the trend, because everyone's obsessed with the Nepo baby
trend. I never
trend.
Used to be called a Nepo baby. Nobody knew who I was. Yeah.
How interesting. How do you cope on the days where all those comments get to you? Because you are really strong and you are really tough, but I'm sure you must have days where you're just like, it's so difficult.
You know, the days that really you'll find me crying in my bedroom is when I see a friend or I hear about someone I know saying nasty things about me. For some reason, it doesn't bother me if I don't know you, but it really upsets me when I find out that like a girl or a guy has gone to the other side on me. And I just think so gutted because I really have a lot of time for people. And when I hear them talk bad about me, I'm like, I just feel like I failed because I'm like, wow, I thought you were a good egg and I put my time into you. But maybe that's selfish of me thinking that my time was wasted. But then I'm like, I thought I'm quite a good judge of character. But you know what? The issue is, I think in our society, we try and make everything about us. It's not about us. It's about them. And if they don't want to be a part of your life, then let them go. And I think I do feel like recently I have entered a new era of my career. Terms of I've done the Capital Breakfast Show for a year now, and you know, we're speaking to hundreds of thousands of people a day on there, you know, speaking for 4 hours, getting up at 4:30 every morning, and then half the time I'm flying down to London on the weekends, doing a week's worth of jobs over the weekend, flying back to Scotland, and even driving to work for an hour and every day on that motorway, and I'm not a good driver. That was terrifying for me, and still is terrifying me, because I'm not a good driver. And I think all these things have built me into perhaps a much tougher resilience than I thought I ever had.
Mm.
I thought I worked hard before, but now I'm like, okay, I know I work hard. No one can question my work ethic. I take no days off. And then any day off, I'll be editing TikToks and posting TikToks. And maybe, I'm sure there's loads of people that will watch this and be like, you know, that's unhealthy. But
yes,
it's like, it comes from passion. It comes from desire. And if that's what I want to do, I do feel like I owe it to my family, because my family have put up a lot with me chasing this dream. My little brothers go to school and they've got laughed at for me doing my thing, or me being on the Daily Mail with a leggy display. So I feel like if I've come this far, there's no way we're giving up now. And I also want to be, I've got a lot of young fans, and I don't want them to think that I've come this far to give up now, you know, that I've let the outside noise win. You know, I'm always telling you, keep going. You don't let them bring you down.
What about for the people who are listening who are saying, like you just said, that's unhealthy and you're promoting an unhealthy work culture by saying, like, I work 7 days a week and I never take a day off?
I think that works for me and I'm able to function like that.
Yeah.
But I think there's no need for you to be doing that if you don't want to do that. Mm. If you want to do that, absolutely. Nobody can tell you what to do. I think it's you v you, and you can't compare yourself to anyone else. I think the funny thing is when people come on podcasts and get cancelled, it's because they talk about other people.
Mm.
I'm never talking about anyone else. I'm talking about me and my relationship with me and my work rate. So for me, I'm not giving up till I get there. But that's no reason to say that you might be able to do everything I want to do in 1 year. You might decide to be a pop star right now, an R&B star or a TV star, be the next Maya Jama today, and you might get there within 6 months.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And I applaud you for that and happy for you for that. But I've not done that and that's not been my path.
Mm.
But like you said, you've got to trust the timing. And for me, this is my year of enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know, let's just start enjoying the fact that I've come this far. Let's enjoy the fact that I get to go to the Brit Awards. Let's enjoy that took me a million door knocking to get there.
Yeah.
Because people see the red carpet picture. They don't see the million emails, meetings and door knocks it took to get on that red carpet. You know, let's start glamorizing that. Let's start glamorizing what it took for me to present on the BAFTA red carpet, BAFTA Film Awards. It wasn't even the TV Awards, it was Film Awards. I was on that red carpet and we saw Margot Robbie. And I was like, I'm actually here. Like, can we actually just stop a minute? I've only gone and done it. You know, I was only strutting down the aisles in Tesco, picking up bread and then putting like a caption about my ex-boyfriend on top. You know, you've got to accept the small wins in life.
I also think in terms of the working hard thing, like you said, some people are like sprinters and I'm the same. When I'm going in, I'm going in. But then I literally burn out and I'm like, I'm tired, whatever. But some people work in that way. Some people can do a little bit every single day for 5 years or 7 years, and that's in their life plan. And some people are like, I can work for 18 hours, and no one's telling you what to do. Also, people's work dynamic is different. Some people like to be at work and work 4 long days a week, and some people like to work 5 shorter days a week. I know people have work arrangements like that. And it's interesting because when you hear all these athletes saying, I was training like 17 hours a day or 15 hours a day, and they've made it, you're like, amazing. They were training 15 hours a day and they did it. And when people are doing it, they're like, oh, you're promoting hustle culture. I mean, it's just so unique to everyone's situation. And I think, like you said, no one's telling you what to do. No one's telling you this is what you should be doing. I'm just telling you this is what I'm doing currently. Next week, you might be like, or next year, you might be like, do you know what? I want to have a bit of a restful year. I might take a bit more time out. That could change. Or you might be like, for the next 5 years, I'm going to push really hard and I want to retire by the time I'm 30. Nobody knows. And I think that we've all want to do something extraordinary, and everyone's path to doing something extraordinary is different too.
It's really interesting you said that. I'm a big football fan. I love football. I've got 2 younger brothers. My dad, they're really into it. So I've just always watched football. And I always talk about it with my mum, because you see superstars, like you've got your Bellinghams and Mbappes, and they always thank their parents. And they say, it was my mum and dad, you know, making me kick a football when I was 3.
Yeah.
And we applaud that. We're like, wow, their parents got them out in the field for 8 hours a day. David Beckham in his documentary,
yes,
out in the field 11 hours a day. One of the first questions everyone asked me, you know, that's outrageous that your mum wanted you to be a singer or a pop star so young. You opened Elton John's concert at 13. Baby Mbappe was on that field at 3, you know? So why is it you want to judge me as a musician for putting myself out there at 13? But yet, I'm not being funny, the starting 11 is like already discovered in the under fucking 9s.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's interesting. It's interesting.
We're there to applaud athletes, but when it comes to musicians, it's almost like that's inappropriate. That's terrible. That's awful. That's awful parenting. Whereas I'm like, well, I'm a musician, and that's definitely no different from the greatest athletes out there kicking a football.
I think we see that with like Beyonce's dad, Britney's dad.
Yeah.
That same narrative. I mean, I don't know, before everyone attacks me about the whole Britney Spears thing, I really don't know anything about it, about what her dad's done. I don't know. So just don't attack me. I don't know. All I know is I've heard that Beyonce's dad pushed her and Britney's dad pushed her. And that might be true. I don't know. But it's interesting what you just said about the David Beckham documentary, because his dad was like, no, do it again. Do it again. Keep doing that corner. Go over and over. And when you watch those videos, you're like, wow, so inspiring.
My mum always reminds me, if I'm ever having a day where I'm like, oh, come on, just give me a break now. Just really, just let's get the song to one of my songs to blow up on TikTok. Mm. It's always good to me, why do you think that you're any different from anyone out there? And why do you think that you, just because you've worked this hard, that you're entitled to the success? None of us are entitled to success just because we work hard. You have to keep going and expect nothing. And that's the mantra I take now. And I have to thank my mum. My mum, I really owe everything to my mum because she's always the one saying, work harder. Like, go learn a new instrument. Go perfect your craft even more. You know, there's no such thing as arrived. You've never arrived. You know, Beyonce is your prime example. Renaissance, one of the best-selling tours of all time, and now she's just dropped two new country songs, and I've no doubt we're going to get a country album and then a country tour. Mm. You're never done reinventing yourself. You're never done exciting people, changing the way, working hard, or finding a new you, finding a new sound. And it comes back to the pivot. So we think that we're too good to pivot. Beyonce's just pivoted, but we don't judge that because she's a superstar. But yeah, we want to judge a small TikTok or a small influencer pivoting, just trying to get it right. We're all trying to get it right. We are all doing our best. Let's give people a chance. Let's collaborate together. Let's push the TikToker. Let's push the influencer if they're a friend. And if this comes down to, have you noticed that probably half my friends on Instagram will post Taylor Swift and Beyonce on their story when she's announced a tour, but are they supporting me when I'm announcing a small-time gig? No. And no judgment to them. But I'm just saying that's in our culture. It's cool to support Beyonce because Beyonce's Beyonce. It's not cool to support your aspiring musician or an aspiring dancer, an aspiring lawyer, because they're not Beyonce yet. So if anything, if you're watching this and you do have a friend who's got a small business, a small flower shop, she's the one that needs the share, not Beyonce or Taylor Swift. But every time I'm flicking through my stories, I see Taylor Swift. I'm not seeing all the small businesses. So if anything, I go out my way to constantly, if I see a friend posting a small business or like flowers or cards or bracelets, I'll always go like buy from it and I'll post it on my story. So I'm like, they need the help more than anything.
I love that. So true. And I think the key point you've kind of raised in this podcast is don't feel embarrassed to pivot.
Yeah.
Don't feel embarrassed to change. Change is a good thing.
Yeah.
It means you're growing.
And embarrassment is only embarrassing if you let it be embarrassing. If you sit there and cringe in it. You know what? I did an embarrassing thing. That was hella awkward, but it doesn't matter because I'm going to put it behind me. And yeah, we can be trendy and call that delulu, but it's just life. We're going to be embarrassed 1 million times more.
And actually, there's only one person that can actually make you feel embarrassed.
Yep.
You.
So we say no.
I love it. That's so powerful. The embarrassment thing is so good because I think so many people struggle with it. And actually, it is only ourselves that can make us feel embarrassed because there's loads of things that people would probably think is embarrassing, but I just don't think it is.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
So great. Thank you so much for coming on.
I've loved this. Thank you so much.
It just flew by, didn't it?
I can't believe it. Wow, I feel like a minute.
Thank you so much. I'm really, really, really grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you.